You are in the Senate Education Committee and Workforce Committee. I'm a little under the weather this afternoon, so if I don't look like I'm paying attention, I really am. You're going to be lucky, those of you who don't like my questions, because they're usually hard, you'll probably find me a little bit not quite on my game. So anyway, if you have a cell phone, as I always caution you, please turn it off or turn it on vibrate. If you do not, and I hear it, you will be making a contribution to the Common School Fund. And they will appreciate that.
It's up to $1,500 this week.
Yes. It is. And as we get closer to closing out the school budget, it gets even higher. If you are here to testify on a bill, it's your first time in the building, we have sign-up sheets on the table in the back. So with that, we are going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 838. Senator Decker, Representative Butler, and is Senator Johnson here with you? Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 838 creates the Oregon Innovation Council. It establishes a number of funds that go to that council and their activities. It abolishes the Higher Education Technology Transfer Board and associated fund. And this measure has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. Gentlemen.
He's going to Ontario, I just learned, so he goes first.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair Walker and members of the committee. Thank you very much for the opportunity today to be able to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 838. Oregon's economy depends upon our ability...
Representative Butler, I know who you are, but those in TV land...
I stampede to apologize. Representative Tom Butler from House District 60.
Thank you.
Oregon's economy depends upon our ability to create family wage jobs in a variety of industries throughout Oregon. In today's global economy, we must continually create new products, add new value to existing products, or to find new ways to be more productive in all areas. All of this requires innovation. Our innovation capacity relies on three key elements that are linked within Senate Bill 838. First, we must increase our research and ability to create new ideas. Last session, we established ONAMI, our first signature research center. ONAMI's research reaches across traditional and high-tech industries to help our existing and emerging industries be and remain competitive. It was a prudent investment on the state's part, and since we invested $1 million of general fund, it has returned over $35 million in federal and private funding since that investment. The request for $7 million of investment in this bill will further strengthen our economy and our education system in Oregon. Number two, we must make it easier for universities, small businesses, and entrepreneurs to take their ideas to market, to make them commercialize this research into new Oregon products and businesses. The $2 million of commercialized research fund will help to do this. It's modeled after Oklahoma's proof of concept fund that leveraged $15 of additional private investment for every $1 of state-provided general fund. Number three, we must do a better job at connecting the pieces within the innovation economy. This bill establishes the Oregon Innovation Council, which will not only develop a comprehensive state plan for the innovation economy, but will coordinate and show how successful programs like ETEC and the Oregon Growth Account work side by side with ONAMI and the Commercialized Research Fund to strengthen our economy and the university system. Innovation creates well-paying jobs, enhances the quality of our education system, and helps to provide stable revenue base for our state. This is more than just a high-tech bill. It's an industry and education competitiveness bill, which is why I strongly support it and encourage your support. We've proven that the return of taxpayers' dollars in these issues so that we know that it's a wise investment, as we have done so in the past. However, the most important reason to enact this bill is to provide Oregon with new opportunities for our neighbors today in Oregon and our children in Oregon for tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative.
Madam Chair,
yes, do you have a question?
Before Representative Butler leaves, this is a unique opportunity to have the chairs of both revenue committees at the same table. And I was just going to ask both of them if my looking upon this bill favorably is going to enhance the chances of my tax credit for rural health care providers bill that will be in here.
Senator, that is shameless.
Absolutely shameless.
Madam Chair, Senator Cruz, we're taking that up next week in the House revenue. So.
Just a little plug.
I have one just like you.
You know, Madam Chair, Ryan Decker from Beaverton, we have a lot of folks who, you know, are leaders in the private industry behind me, and now they got a little insight into how the legislative process works. And they often ask us at these meetings, you know, we don't understand this legislative. We're trying to move a bill through the process. We're trying to get this done. And you guys tell us, they often ask Tom or Frank or I, you tell us to do these things, and we just do not. And so, Senator Cruz, I think all of us thank you for providing a little insight into how we move our bills through the legislative
but
process.
But I haven't got a response from you, Senator, so...
It's coming.
Okay.
Have a step back. He's off to Ontario, which
Thank you, Representative Butler.
Just around. Madam Chair, I'm going to go off script and just maybe set up, because we have a couple panels that are coming in. Mm-hmm. I was involved in, and I get kidded a lot for not feeling too passionately about many things, but this is one I feel very passionately about, because I think America's ability and Oregon's ability to compete in a global economy is predicated on one thing, and that is innovation. We know undoubtedly that this last century was the American century. I don't know if we're taking bets on this next century, if you would say with some confidence that this next century will be the American century. But it was, if you look back from the early 1900s and the auto industry and the manufacturing, it was all around, and natural resources, all around innovation and finding new ways to do products. And so that is the spirit and the template behind the legislation you see before you. It is investing in the niche things, and where this comes from is the Oregon Council of Knowledge and Economic Development, which we created, and the whole notion behind it was, let's get the leaders of our private sector industry, some state legislators, and our university system in science and technology. And it spans, we really believe, and I didn't do this on purpose, but I grabbed my Oregon agricultural water, because we think a lot of the new innovations that are going to come out are going to be in agricultural and natural resources, and how do you better deliver products. But the whole spirit of ONAMI and the next iteration of this, which is the Oregon Innovation Council, is we should, at being a medium-sized state, we have advantages that California doesn't have and Washington doesn't have, and certainly other bigger states. We can get all the players in a room together, being a medium-sized state, and we're nimble enough to do things. And so we did a scan of Oregon and found where are our core competencies that were more competitive and can leverage those federal dollars that you're going to hear about and those private dollars that you're going to hear about. And nano and micro sciences technology is where we thought the state should make, and to our great credit last session, we didn't make a lot of new investments, if any, last session, but we said we're going to start one new program, and that is ONAMI, and we put $20 million down at the U of O, OSU, and PSU to do the necessary research and start it, and the state putting the marker down, you'll hear about the leveraging that it brought. But I really believe for us, I guess to conclude the thought, for this to be the American century again and to be a repeat performance, it was all predicated on our ability to innovate, our ability to think up new projects, and that's largely going to occur in our universities. And this is Oregon's, what you'll hear coming, is Oregon's best foot forward in that realm. And so, Madam Chair, I thank you for letting us on your docket, for entertaining these bills, and I think we have a good story to tell.
Senator Deckard, I have a couple of questions. Why is it that you want to abolish the two separate councils and put them into one? Why will it work more effectively this way?
And Pat Scruggs is going to talk a little bit about this, too. We found that the best model for, and if you look around, Arizona is a good model of, you need an executive that's very interested, but getting all your players in one room. And right now, you guys, you hear OCED, you hear ETIC, the Engineering Technology Investment Council. You hear these names, and we thought we should have one place, a clearinghouse, for everything related to this field, and so that when we come to the legislature, we go to the Oregon Business Plan, you hear OI Oregon Inc., or OI, the Oregon Innovation Council, you'll know this is the place that has brought together, hopefully, folks from all sector of the private economy, private sector, with the universities, and it took a lot of heavy lifting to get there, but I think we're there, and we think it should be just one council.
Okay, my second question is, do you think this gives the governor more control of the money?
It's like, Madam Chair, like any other endeavor, it's a partnership between the legislative and the executive. Ultimately, the governor's proposed, and we appreciate the proposals he's put forward. We'll adjudicate those proposals, as we did last time, which was not in the governor's budget last session, and it was a legislative effort championed by Senator Morse and a few others that got this legislation to the governor's desk. And so I think it'll be a shared effort between legislators who are intensely interested in this, and you'll notice it's bipartisan, bicameral, and it's been a process that's worked pretty well.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? All right, Senator, thank you. We'll hear next from Rich Linton, Michelle Gert, and Skip Rung, I think.
I'll begin.
Sure. Your name and where are you from?
Sure. For the record, I'm Richard Linton, Vice President for Research and Graduate Studies at the University of Oregon. It's a great pleasure to be here to support Senate Bill 328. Since you're a little bit under the weather, Senator Walker, and I'm a little under the weather too, I'll try a joke to begin things. A Ronald Reagan joke, actually, about the government's role in economic development.
Well, that'll cheer me up.
Careful, Rich.
His quote was, if it moves, tax it. If it keeps moving, regulate it. If it stops moving, subsidize it. So I don't think that's quite what we have in mind in terms of the Senate Bill 838, and hopefully it represents the best in government approach to economic development. Senator Deckard already really highlighted innovation, the key element to this bill. I put three other I's into the equation: integration, investment, and impact. So innovation, because we have the complex combination of research, education, technical workforce, scientific discovery, economic growth. And for Oregon and U.S. to be competitive on the global stage, we really have to work to assure that these components are effectively integrated. And in short, Senate Bill 838, I think, tries to maintain Oregon's position as an innovation state, perhaps arguably in some cases the innovation state, by providing investments that really further research and development and support not only high tech and new industry, but also in various ways support traditional industry in the state. So that's the innovation piece. Under that, really two major components, the Nanoscience and Microtechnologies Institute and the Commercialized Research Fund, and you'll hear more about those as the session goes on. The other I's that I mentioned, integration, I think one of the real keys to this bill is that it really tries, I think for the first time, to bring a lot of different and important initiatives together under one umbrella. And the Oregon Innovation Council that's proposed would be the forum that many of these initiatives would play out. So in the future, hopefully, when one is trying to comprehend the government's investment in economic development and the innovation economy, one can much more readily do that through this Innovation Council. Investment, another I. These things do require core investment, seed investment, $7 million for ONAMI, $2 million for the Commercialized Research Fund. Arguably, in the ONAMI case, we already have extraordinary leveraging of that investment in just the first 2 years. And I think in all of these areas, we can point to tremendous return on the precious funds that our Oregon taxpayers are providing to the state. And then the final I is the impact part of this, and certainly we look toward the impact across sectors. It impacts higher education. These investments help us build on strengths and quality within the universities. They help us in partnership with industry. And I think in the longer term, we would hope that such investments will improve the economy in Oregon to the point that we can think about reinvestment in higher education, for example, in a meaningful way. So I think it's a wonderful opportunity, wonderful time to think about this initiative, Senate Bill 838. Appreciate your consideration.
Thank you.
And with that, I'll turn to my colleagues who will talk about some of the specific initiatives.
Thank you. Madam Chair and committee members, I'm Michelle Gertz. I'm Vice President and Director of Technology Commercialization for CH2M Hill and Chair of the Engineering and Technology Industry Council, or ETIC, which saves some time in saying. First, I'd like to give you a little bit of background on ETIC. What is ETIC and what have we accomplished? It's summarized in the mission of ETIC, to make post-secondary education and engineering and technology education a strategic resource that fuels the Oregon economy and creates opportunity for all Oregonians. It has its origin in Senate Bill 504 in 1997 to advise the Oregon University System on investments in engineering and technology higher education. In its career, through competitive proposal-driven investments and results-oriented metrics, it has established a track record of demonstrated success. You'll see that summarized in more detail in a two-pager in your packet. ETIC's goals have been primarily on education, and they've been summarized as 2X and excellence. 2X meaning double the number of graduates from engineering, technology, and computer science programs in the state, and excellence elevating the programs to nationally ranked status. It also serves as a resource magnet. ETIC is well on the way to tripling the federal research dollars attracted to these states and programs that have received ETIC funding. ETIC also strives to maximize the private match for these investments, which currently averages about 1.5 times the state investment to date. ETIC also seeks to feed the pipeline because early in our efforts, we found that without providing enough connections in K-12 with post-secondary, there were insufficient people coming in to reach our 2X and excellence goals. So why does ETIC endorse Senate Bill 838? Well, clearly, we're bullish on engineering and technology, but we do recognize that engineering and technology are linked to other state needs for talent and innovation investments. With Senate Bill 838 and with ETIC on the Oregon Innovation Council, we can work collaboratively with other public-private partnerships focusing on these critical talent and innovation needs and industries to move the Oregon economy forward. The development of a regularly updated state plan with the Oregon Innovation Fund as the funding source gives both a framework for the state and the enabling mechanism to thoughtfully prioritize talent and innovation investments. Within this framework, the Anomaly Signature Research Center represents an advanced step along the talent and innovation to focused research to business commercialization continuum. The Oregon Commercialized Research Fund takes the talent and innovation to the next step along this continuum, essential to realizing the full economic value of all of these investments. So ETIC has a long-term statewide vision and looks forward to seeing this continuum realized so that the barriers that exist today are removed and the Oregon residents and businesses can successfully compete on this global playing field. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Walker and members of the committee, my name is Skip Run, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Nanoscience and Microtechnologies Institute. ONAMI's mission is to create sustainable, high-wage jobs in Oregon by growing research revenue in Oregon and commercializing innovations in areas where we have a real competitive advantage. There are 5 points that I'd like to make. First, nanoscience and microtechnologies are not an obscure niche. They are, in fact, technology platforms critical to the future of most, if not all, of Oregon's traded sector industries: agriculture, forest products, energy, metals, biosciences, medical devices, computers, and electronics. Secondly, ONAMI connects Oregon's research and industry strengths into viable economic opportunities. Oregon has a competitive advantage in targeted areas of nanosciences and microtechnologies with world-leading industries in nanotools, microchannels and microfluidics, and semiconductors. As you will hear in a moment from Home Dialysis Plus, we are already turning research into breakthrough commercial products. Three. ONAMI is a wise steward of public funds. Through our deep collaboration and the state's support, we are proving in Oregon the return on investment model that other states have experienced with their signature research centers. Starting from the state's $1 million in general funds, we have secured over $30 million in federal grants and obtained $9 million in private donations and sponsored research from industry. Four. ONAMI has become a national model for collaboration that is gaining attention across the country. In the words of Dr. Adrian Roberts, Battelle consultant and former national laboratory director, quote, "The major differentiator for the ONAMI family is the can-do or just-do-it attitude. I have never encountered anything like this before in academia in 35 years of work in R&D management," close quote. ONAMI is actually getting many compliments like this from company CEOs and senior federal officials, including once from the president's science advisor, Dr. Jack Marburger. Five, ONAMI provides research opportunities for the growing need of PhDs in the workforce. At the Oregon Business Summit in December, Intel reported that it has hired 441 PhDs in the last 4 years for its Oregon operations, yet only seven came from Oregon universities. In a world of advanced technology, we must also prepare advanced workers. Now, I want to thank the legislature for its 2003 investment of $20 million in capital and $1 million in operating funds for ONAMI, as well as its recognition that critical investments in our economic future cannot wait for easy budget times. Our five-year plan is to leverage the $7 million recommended in SB 838 into approximately $200 million in new research awards, recruitment of a select few research teams to boost our competitiveness in focused areas, and tenfold growth in patenting and licensing in order to ramp up the number of new products and exciting new companies. Senate Bill 838 not only supports ONAMI, but places it in the context of the larger innovation economy and education system, which is critical to the future of our state. ONAMI's ability to leverage and coordinate with ETIC, the Oregon Investment Fund, and other efforts led by the Oregon Innovation Council is essential. The Commercialized Research Fund, also contained in Senate Bill 838, will be critical for creating new businesses from the research conducted through ONAMI, lest they be forced to go out of state to find pre-seed funding. All of these pieces come together in Senate Bill 838, which is why it is critical that this bill be enacted. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan. Senator Cruz.
Madam Chair, thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not sure, this panel may not be the appropriate folks to answer the question, but I'm assuming that one of the people coming up to testify will be, because when I'm looking through the duties and the mission of this new council, a lot of talk about the education component and the workforce component. I guess the piece I don't see in here is our ability to accelerate to shovel-ready for capital construction, which is necessary. You got to have a building to have a business sort of thing. And so I'm wondering if it's a real issue in this state, and especially if you're talking natural resource side, it's an even more compelling issue. I'm just wondering if that fits into the scope of what this council will look at and make recommendations for.
Chair Walker and Senator Cruz, I think, in fact, it's true that this bill doesn't address that directly. However, some of the investments that are made include such things as shared facilities that will be incubation sites for businesses, so there's a collaborative relationship between that and other real estate developments that are necessary, as you have pointed out.
Okay, and to follow up. So, I mean, other than what's specific in here, you're looking for barriers and ways to alleviate barriers. Would that be a fair general statement, or is this getting outside the field here?
Well, Senator, I think that's certainly part of it. I think, again, the focus is on the innovation cycle and moving basic discovery and research into the marketplace.
Right.
And key limited investments by the state would have major payoff in helping to seed startup companies, licensing of products, incubation of companies, et cetera. So the focus is really on the early stage, not so much later stage, you know, building major capital facilities for manufacturing.
Madam Chair, it's not even a major capital facility.
Yeah.
If you're going to do a startup business and you have to build a building and you can jump through all the hoops in Idaho in 6 months and it takes you 2 years in Oregon.
Right.
You know, we lose them there, and then the innovation goes there too. So, I mean, you know, it's a dynamic that needs to be addressed in all this. So,
I have a couple questions. Again, I'm not sure if you'll be able to answer them, but I'll give it a shot. There is a provision here which I actually very much like, because I have to tell you, enterprise zones drive me batty because we set up all these parameters for people and businesses to utilize them, and then they don't meet their targets. So what I see here on page 5 of the bill, it would be in section 9, sub 4, 5, sub 5, in and sub 5B, it says the amount of the grant or loan money is available to a business under both phases may not exceed $200,000. And you have to go through first phase one, you get $75,000. If you meet all the requirements, then you get $200,000. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
No more than $200,000. So that'd be an additional $125,000, correct? Okay. Then the second part that I really like is that if this emerging business receives a grant or a loan and they move more than 50% of their employees of the business out of state within 2 years, they have to pay all the money back. That's a very good, cautious approach. Now, how are you going to make them pay the money back? Do they sign a contract? Or how is it that you'll get the money back? I don't want Oregon to be in the position of being a bill collector, because we don't do very well at that. Can you speak to that? Okay. Then I'll ask one of the other panelists to do that. I see people shaking their heads in the back, so they know that that's coming out. The other question I have, and I don't know if any of you can answer this, but maybe you can, Mr. Linton. The Oregon Innovation Council shall establish a signature research center to maximize collaborative ventures among research institutions, et cetera. Where is that research center going to be? Do you know?
Well, of course, the first one, the prototype, is the ONAMI. So that's really the first signature research center. It's focused on the translation of basic research into commercialization. And that all transpired through the Oregon Council on Knowledge and Economic Development. And there's a nice inventory of other opportunity areas developing, including OECD leadership on that, to begin to generate the next generation of signature research ideas, whether it's digital medicine or a focus on education and behavior, neuroscience, et cetera. There are a number of areas where we feel like we have a significant edge in Oregon. We have the technical base, we have the industry strength, critical mass in the universities to support it. And so this bill is really positioning to look then to the next generation of similar centers that would have that same goal, to move basic ideas into the marketplace for the benefit of Oregon and society generally.
So my follow-up question then would be, and President Frohmeyer has been in the Ways and Means Committee and talked about ONAMI and does great things. Do you anticipate the Signature Research Center will be in more than one location?
Yeah, back to your question about location. The ONAMI, of course, is a distributed effort, and we would have at Oregon State, U of O, PSU, specific facilities identified with ONAMI. The next generation of signature research centers, it's completely open. It depends on where the particular leadership and expertise lies as to where specifically it would locate, or even to what extent we would need specific facilities as opposed to just linking existing capacity together in a more effective way. So that's a completely open issue.
Okay, and I think, Ms. Scruggs, you are here to answer some of my questions. Did you have anything else to add to those questions that I was asking?
I could answer those as well as Senator Cruz.
Okay.
For the record, my name is Pat Scruggs. I am the Innovation and Technology Manager at Oregon Economic and Community Development. Chair Walker and members of the committee, one of your questions you asked was in reference to Section 5 about the loans under the commercialized research. We have worked on this bill with Department of Justice, and this would be like other loan agreements in its execution, so the clawback provisions would be included in these loans as part of that. When working with other states in the way that this is set up, especially on the initial grantee of these, the other states who have successfully done this, is part of that is to really make sure that they're fairly much an Oregon-based company or the state company to begin with. And that has been very instrumental in that. So those sort of administrative rules to apply that exist in other states very successfully. They have all said, volunteer, here they are. Come and talk, we'll come out, help you. So with that, we're fairly confident that very few of these actually, they exist in other states. Funds like this have been used very, not often at all, because of the other things that you pointed out in terms of the awards, the milestones, the things that have to happen.
Mm-hmm. And so, they get the tax breaks and then they fall through.
Right, no, and that's thing. So, yeah. So these have been very successfully implemented in other areas with those provisions, and I think that's why those things that you pointed out before are so important to have in here.
And then my question is then that I don't think got answered, and when you grant loan these monies, do they sign a contract because they're getting a loan or a grant, whatever it is, they sign a contract saying I agree to these terms,
yes.
And if they default, you're prepared to go out and collect the money?
Yes.
Okay.
The short answer to that, there may be some other people who can add an answer to that to others, or Senator Deckert may as well.
I'm just, the reason I ask that is some time back in my research at the Oregon State Archives, I learned about the Oregon Trade and Marketing Center. And it was appropriated a whole lot of money from this legislature through former Governor Neil Goldschmidt, about $1 million, and about $500,000 of it never was accounted for. And there were legislative hearings in the interim to find out where the heck the money went.
She's feeling better.
I'm feeling better. So, and I talked to the Economic Development Department about it at the time that I learned about it and said, how come this happened? How do you prevent this from happening before? Well, now there are more checks and balances in place to make sure that money doesn't disappear and we have full accountability for it. So somebody has to be watching the money. And so I just, we're stewards of the taxpayers' money. So I want to make sure we're watching the money here and that these folks are going to meet all the terms and conditions of the loan and the grant.
Yeah. Most of these funds have very... very thorough application and loan program provisions. And I also wanted to, if I may, address Senator Cruz's question about in the industrial lands and the other things with this. The one thing with this, with the Oregon Innovation Council, much like the Oregon Council for Knowledge and Innovation now, is staffed by various agencies, one of those which is Oregon Economic and Community Development. Also noted on the Oregon Innovation Council is a member, basically the director of the agency, as well as the chancellor of the university system. Part of the reason they're on there, the lessons we have learned, as Senator Deckert said, from other states who have these collaborative councils, is it's at that point where we can say, yes, now this is a really critical issue, and now these are the specific ways it impacts industrial lands or other infrastructure issues. So therefore, we need this as part of your budget now, and the same with the university systems. So that's why those members are on there, is to make sure that those links exist.
Madam Chair, I guess it would be helpful if this body, because it's going to be a very credible body, and part of your job is to advise the governor and the legislature, so when you come across roadblocks of that nature, they can be pointed out to us for correction. So
yes. Yes.
Well, I think Senator Morissette had a question, but he stepped out for the moment. So when he comes back, I'll see if he still has one. Did you have a presentation you wanted to make?
I just wanted to answer questions.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you all for coming. Next, we'll hear from Jack Isselman, Kate Altman, and Dave Penn. Hi. State your name and who you're with, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Walker, committee members. For the record, my name is Jack Isselman. I'm here today representing Pixelworks and its CEO, Alan Alley. I've also been asked to deliver testimony on behalf of Wally Van Valkenburg, Chair of the Technology and Intellectual Property Group at the Stoll Reeves Law Firm. Before the testimony, Mr. Alley and Mr. Van Valkenburg both urged me to relate to you their strong desire to appear personally before the committee today. Unfortunately, due to long-arranged out-of-state travel commitments, neither gentleman could attend today. I know Mr. Alley and Mr. Van Valkenburg have spoken to some of you on this topic previously. They both extend an open invitation to your questions at any time. If it pleases the committee, in the interest of time, I will read brief statements from Mr. Alley and Mr. Van Valkenburg. These statements are more fully contained in letters Mr. Alley and Mr. Van Valkenburg have delivered to the committee today. First, a statement from Mr. Alley. As chair of the Oregon Council for Knowledge and Economic Development, OCED, I urge your support of Senate Bill 838 to continue the efforts of our council to advance innovation in our economy. I've been honored to serve OCED as its chair since 2001. In that time, I have observed with great pride how, during particularly austere economic times, a dedicated and visionary group of Oregonians have collaborated to advance the cause of economic growth through innovation. I believe in the work of OCED because I have experienced how the power of an idea can evolve to create a thriving enterprise. Businesses that deliver high-wage jobs, innovative research, and community philanthropy to Oregon. Pixelworks, which I co-founded in 1997, began solely as an idea for a new way of delivering images to advanced displays. From our humble beginnings with 5 employees and $10,000 in startup capital, today we are a global leader in image processing semiconductors. We were proud to be recognized by Forbes magazine in February 2005 as the fourth fastest growing technology company in America. The future is even more exciting. At our world headquarters in Tualatin, we employ more than 150 Oregonians. Last year, while serving customers from Shanghai to Istanbul and many places in between, we contributed more than $170 million in sales to Oregon's traded sector economy. Like Pixelworks, the most exciting part of serving on OCED is in the knowledge that our work is just beginning. With a sense of achievement for what we have done, and with even greater anticipation of the progress to come, OCED respectfully requests your support of the proposals contained in Senate Bill 838, including establishing the Oregon Innovation Council to continue the work of OCED, allocating $7 million in lottery funds to assist the operations of the Oregon Nanoscience and Microtechnologies Institute, and establishing $2 million in a commercialized research fund to help entrepreneurs and businesses translate ideas into competitive products and businesses. Fostering innovation in Oregon will provide all Oregonians with a stronger economy by creating high-quality jobs that make Oregon competitive in the global economy. Now a briefer statement from Mr. Van Valkenburg. In my role as chair of the Oregon Economic and Community Development Commission, I have seen the value we create as we invest in Oregon's innovation economy. Innovation is critical to all industries. It not only drives our high-tech and life science industries, but it also allows industries such as food processing, farming, wood products, metals, energy, and transportation equipment to stay competitive in global and local markets. In my law practice, I have seen how innovative companies contribute both high-quality jobs and high-quality people to our state. I view Senate Bill 838 as an important vehicle for advancing Oregon's competitive position. I respectfully submit to this committee that we must continue these investments if we want Oregon to compete effectively in a global economy. Those states that make these investments will be the winners in the competition to create family wage jobs. Please help Oregon be one of those winners.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank Mr. Van Valkenburg and Mr. Alley for their statements. I couldn't agree with them more. Did you have a statement of your own?
No, with that, if there are no questions of me, I will pass to Kate Altman.
Okay, great.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Kay Altman, and I'm CFO of Home Dialysis Plus, a startup company utilizing innovation from OSU in our product. I'm also an Oregon resident and a graduate from OSU College of Engineering. Today I'm here to testify how Senate Bill 838 and 853 will help companies such as HD Plus. We launched HD Plus in 2003 with the goal of developing a kidney dialysis system for use in the home. The product to be commercialized by HD Plus has the potential to impact the Oregon economy by developing a new manufacturing sector in Oregon, by developing equipment manufacturers specializing in MEX technology, by increasing the value-add jobs in Oregon from suppliers of components to assembling the product, by increasing our presence in the biomedical sector, and establishing a vehicle for commercializing technology developed in a signature research center. The product has the potential to increase dollars going to education by a royalty agreement. HD Plus currently has an exclusive option agreement with OSU for the MEX dialyzer. This agreement will become a royalty agreement. With every dialyzer sold, OSU will receive a royalty. The dialyzer will be packaged as a disposable. The anticipated revenue from the disposals 2 years after the product launch is greater than $74 million. And of course, the product has the potential to improve the quality of life of all kidney patients currently on dialysis. The current status of the project is as follows. The initial proof of concept studies were completed in December 2004 with excellent results. OSU received a Murdoch grant for $50,000 for the next phase of the proof of concept studies, blood through the dialyzer. These studies start in April 2005. David Browning presented the HD Plus MEX dialyzer technology at an annual dialysis conference in February. Our technology was well received by leaders, both doctors and major equipment suppliers. In addition, it was the only new technology presented that had any opportunity to be immediately commercialized. Our bench system is being tested for typical parameters during an actual treatment. HD Plus met with the CEO of a disposable manufacturer this month in Minnesota. Our discussions have generated a letter of agreement to be advanced to the parent company for approval. The letter of agreement is focused on the Minnesota company's expertise in manufacturing the disposable portion of the HD Plus system. This could be a problem, potentially sending jobs outside of Oregon. Potential investors are performing due diligence on HD Plus, and they are now requesting a Northwest Fund advisor. ONAMI and OSU have been extremely active as a partner with HD Plus. Under the direction of David Browning and his technical team, ONAMI and OSU designed and built the first microdialyzer. ONAMI and OSU have provided the expertise in the basic science and physics for the dialyzer. HD Plus has provided the practical clinical expertise in setting requirements for ONAMI and OSU for a commercial product. In the future, ONAMI, OSU, and HD Plus will optimize the dialyzer and work with a manufacturer, hopefully in Oregon, to develop the processes for mass production. The role of ONAMI in business will help other entrepreneurs and other startup companies by being a stronger partner in opening doors with other technology players, by understanding the requirements for a business to launch a product, and by assisting in supporting other entrepreneurs in raising outside capital. There are other R&D opportunities offered by ONAMI, for example, the micro heat pump, that have tremendous opportunities for the Oregon economy. In order to attract investment, we need to show the medical community that our technology, the MEX dialyzer, will perform better than the current technology. The testing that has been conducted and now the blood studies that will be conducted will show the investors the efficacy of this technology. approximately $100,000 from sources including the Murdoch Foundation, the Urkula Foundation, and Onami, and Altman Browning and Company have funded the research to date. Whereas we are grateful to all these establishments, grant writing takes a tremendous amount of time and therefore has increased our time to market, something you don't want to do with new technology. The $2 million commercialized research fund in Senate Bill 838 and the mechanism contemplated in Senate Bill 853, sponsored by Senator Morris, will provide a great way to cover this type of proof of concept testing that we need testing in the future. In conclusion, I would like to say that Onami and OSU are helping launch HD+. The payoff will be new jobs, new manufacturing sectors, and a signature research center for all Oregonians. OSU will gain through a royalty-bearing license agreement. We have the entrepreneurial spirit in Oregon. We have a strong engineering and manufacturing center sector, and we have great universities supporting new technologies. We need Senate Bill 838 and 853 for launching new technologies in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Altman. It does sound like we have people in Oregon who are capable of doing great things, and mm-hmm. I don't want anybody telling us we can't. So this is proof that we can collaborate together, both publicly and privately, and do wonderful, wonderful things. Mr. Chen, you're next.
Thank you. Chair Walker, committee members. For the record, my name is David Chen. I represent as a general partner OVP Venture Partners as well as the Onami Advisory Board. OVP Venture Partners is a Northwest regionally based venture capital firm. In our 20-year history, we have invested well over $400 million to date in the startup, high technology, entrepreneurial activities, predominantly in the two states of Oregon and Washington. Simply put, our job is to find the next Intel and to help grow the next wave of innovation industries. When we step back and think about the nanotechnology area, what we see is the nanotechnology industrial revolution is just simply the next wave in the microminiaturization following the semiconductor industry as well as the life sciences genetics industry. Simply put, the whole space of nanotechnology is about getting technologies, products, materials down to the atomic level. That is, how do we start to manipulate and manage materials down at that level? We can already see today how nanotechnology research is already creating impact from as far afield as the use of carbon nanotubes, which are basically rings of carbon atoms, now using to push the bounds of semiconductor memory all the way through to the project that you've heard about just now, HD+, with implications for embedding nanoparticles and microtechnologies in things as close to home as kidney dialysis. So we view this whole body of work in nanotechnology as very much the stepping stone of exploring a whole generation of industries that we believe will take us for the next 20, 30 years in development, that we're very much at the beginning of this at this point in time. I want to lead you back to again, our job as venture capitalists, and that is to find the next wave of innovation and to find the regions that, in fact, have the best chance of taking advantage of those innovations. I think most of you are well aware of the Silicon Valley, and the Silicon Valley is named the Silicon Valley because 50 years ago, 40 years ago, we saw the germination of the semiconductor industry there. It happened in many ways by accident, and we believe that in this nanotechnology era, the same thing will happen, that regions that will grow, that will in fact germinate entire industry sectors very much the same way that it happened in Palo Alto and Menlo Park in the 50s. I have been involved with Onami as both a community volunteer and most recently as chairman of the Onami Advisory Board. So I've been involved with this activity now for well over 2 years. I will tell you that when we made and I made the first decision on behalf of my firm to begin to become active in driving and catalyzing and just lending arms and legs to this effort, it was with actually a bit of deliberation. As you've heard, we view nanotechnology as one of the hot points and great opportunities for creation of new industries over the next few years. When we took a step back and asked, do we in Oregon have a chance at that piece of the pie? I will tell you that our analysis was based on the fact of really two fundamental, or maybe three fundamental, pieces of analysis. One, our first belief was that in this next nanotechnology revolution, that in fact one of the key aspects of this would be the foundation in our semiconductor industry. I think many of you are familiar with the fact that Intel is rooted here in our soil. I think much of what you may not be quite aware of is that with Intel, 99% of Intel's research in 90 nanometer, 65 nanometer, and 45 nanometer, and ultimately 20 nanometer work is rooted here. So literally billions of dollars of Intel money is spent here in primary research and development. That also translates into human resource. Equally important is that surrounding that set of expertise that is absolutely pushing the bounds on nanotechnology is a constellation of companies, including FEI, including other semiconductor firms, including Applied Materials, Novellus, that is suppliers to Intel that also are pushing the bounds in response to Intel's leadership in the nanotechnology and the nanometer area. So our first conclusion was, simply put, there's a lot of very smart people that are already working on nanotechnology that are in these soils. Again, human talent. The second thing that we saw that made this area and Onami worthwhile for our investment was that we saw for the first time a collaborative environment that was actually starting to take place between our three research universities. Simply put, divided, we don't have much of a chance. Together, we actually have a chance to actually build a world-class center. And that was a very, very simple concept that we saw between PSU, OSU, and U of O, that nanotechnology research and nanotechnology disciplines would be based on, number one, facilities, number two, researchers coming from very different facets, and that no one of our universities had a critical mass, but together, in fact, if you took an inventory, we had that critical mass of both facilities as well as talents. And so we saw an opportunity to bring and further enhance the collaboration that took place there. And third, what we also saw was a unique opportunity in time, and that was that we saw the federal agenda of our federal delegation. We saw both the legislative agenda in this state as well as the executive branch, our governor's agenda, all aligning around this very important issue of human resources, advanced research and development in our educational facilities, as well as, in particular, around this whole area of micro and nano integration. So we saw an incredible regional strength, an incredible regional openness to actually collaborate between our universities, and most of all, an alignment of public, private, and multiple governmental layers aligned along a single interest. So we saw that we actually had a chance that if we actually catalyzed this, that we actually could emerge as a world-class region in nanotechnologies. I think that if you take a step back and look at our report card for the last 2 to 3 years, that you can truly, honestly look at Onami and use the word catalyst. And I'm using the word catalyst as a small kernel or a small material that in fact accelerates a set of reactions around it. Onami has been a catalyst for bringing our three universities together in unprecedented joint university research. I would say that the report card is that almost every one of our grant proposals that has been turned into the various federal agencies and various granting agencies over the course of the last 12 to 18 months has in fact emerged from multiple researchers in multiple departments from multiple universities in our system. That, if you know anything about the university system, is rare and unprecedented. To have researchers that in fact are seeing this as a viable way of enhancing their reputation and their research, that's a very, very bold achievement. It has been a catalyst for unprecedented industry and public collaboration. We have in fact harnessed one of the things I said that we were hoping would happen is we have in fact harnessed the area's expertise in Hewlett-Packard and FEI and in fact brought them into the fold to collaborate very openly with our three universities. In fact, I would say that one of the questions that was asked previously was, where will this facility be located? I would I would tell you that the dream, the vision that we're now capable of actually uttering, I believe, is that what we will be able to provide to researchers in nanotechnology over the course of the next 2 to 3 years is perhaps the single largest and most equipped facility for nanotechnology research spanning a 50, 60, 100-mile radius that stretches from Eugene, Corvallis, all the way through to Hillsboro. And part of that is not only the research facilities that are being collaboratively made available as shared resources in our three universities, but also the research facilities that are now becoming open at our companies such as Hewlett-Packard, FEI, etc. And these are all in its early stages, but this is a level of collaboration that we've never seen before, where private enterprise is, in fact, openly collaborating with these shared facilities. So I don't believe it's an exaggeration, but that over the course of the next 3 years, I do believe that we can build one of the largest and best-equipped virtual nanotechnology office parks in the world. It's been a catalyst for in many ways, Oregon confidence. Oregon, now I think 3 years later actually can dare utter the words that we have the willingness, the will, and now the substance to actually claim a seat on a worldwide basis of being a nanotechnology center. We most certainly have a long way to go. The job is by no means done, but we are actually building a tremendous amount of community confidence to be able to utter those ambitions and those words. I think these would all be substantively observed by, in fact, I think one of the things that was mentioned earlier was that Jack Marburger, who is the White House science advisor, who also heads up the Office of Science and Technology in the White House, I think he no longer is sitting in that seat, but when he did make his visit here to Oregon in fall of last year, his conclusion and in his meeting with our governor as he got ready to board his flight out was that he had not seen in any other region in the United States both two attributes. One was the degree of collaboration both at the university level but also with our industry and making the best utilization of our industry. But number two, what he observed, and I think this is symptomatic of our industrial base here, and as well our industry research that's taking place in our university. His second observation was that what he saw in other university systems, whether it was in Boston, whether it was in San Francisco, the Bay Area, was that their nanotechnology research was rooted in the future. It was rooted in advanced nanotechnology robots and things of that nature. Very, very, in some ways, pie in the sky. What he observed taking place here in Oregon in our research in nanotechnology was that it all revolved around the practicality. Can we build it? How do we build it? The research and techniques of mass production techniques. So in closing, what I believe that we have is with this bill, with your continued support, with this continued collaboration, what we have here in Oregon is the ability and the opportunity to build a magnet for talent, for the human resources, for research, for investment dollars, and most importantly, the opportunity and the basic foundations to build many of the companies that can fuel, in fact, the economy of the next 20 to 30 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chin. Ms. Altman, this will be helpful to you to know that Oregon, like much of the country, has a problem with obesity. And we had a discussion about that in a committee hearing about the reason for physical education, the need for physical education in our schools. And we had doctors in here testifying about the high number of children and adults who are now becoming diabetics. So your product will be in great demand if we don't turn this trend around. And I'm sorry to say that about Oregon. We hope we can turn it around, but I think there is a market for your product. I want to thank, I don't know, Mr. Isselman, did you provide this to me? That's what I thought. I had a note here somewhere, and I want to thank you for that because I don't know if other members of the committee had been provided that or not. But it does, it is the legislative guide for the Oregon Council for Knowledge and Economic Development, and that just gives a history, the legislative history of Oregon's investment in this program. And I think that was real helpful for me to see the timeline. And I'd pass Senator Deckard a note. Didn't we vote last session to give a $100 million investment in something? And I couldn't remember where that was, and it's in here as House Bill 3613 through the PERS funds. So it looks like we have, since 1997, been slowly, cautiously making that investment, and it's been paying off, and this is the next step to take it to the next level is what I'm hearing from you all today.
I think that's a completely accurate summary.
Okay, thank you. And I saw Senator Morsett's hand up a while back. Did you?
The moment is gone.
The moment is gone. All right, sorry. Just next time, just speak up. Senator Deckard, did you want to conclude with anything here?
No, Madam Chair, nothing more than to thank this group of people who have worked together very collaboratively, and I think the time and energy that folks put in has been pretty astonishing, and hopefully with great results. And so we're obviously very beaming with the work that we've done and the leveraging, but I guess the one thought I was in, you're not going to get a tough question from me, but I would ask David, because you're on the front lines and we talk around the new economy word often, what one or two ideas that would you have for the state, other than what we're doing here, as you survey the states that you have companies in, you would say, because it's rare that you get to just tell us as policymakers, Oregon, you ought to be doing this or you ought to be doing that. But it's been valuable in the past when you've shared that with myself.
I would say two things. One is that in some ways, because we are a state that has scarce resources and we're a small state, that the kind of thinking that you're doing to pinpoint the investments, and literally California can write a multi-billion dollar stem cell research. I'm not sure that's in fact the best thing that government should be doing. But the pinpoint facilities, kinds of support that you're giving ONAMI, the kinds of pinpoint programs that you're giving, I think are actually much, much more measured and much more high leverage than in fact some of these blanket multi-hundreds of millions of dollars of investment. So in some ways that's a very counterintuitive way of thinking about this. In venture we have a way of saying that you can smother a company with love and money. That sometimes putting people on the appropriate diet is the right way to grow great enterprises. I would say that the second most important thing, and I realize this may sound kind of funny, but the second most important thing that you as legislatures and members of government can do is use your bully pulpit, which is that the thing that we most need in Oregon is awareness building that in fact we are doing some very exciting things here. I think that when our Senator Wyden, Senator Smith, when the governor gets a chance to speak nationally, to be able to proudly and substantively, there's nothing to be embarrassed about here, substantively point to the human resource talent that's in this state and the work that we're doing, that does more to enhance and in fact draw companies to this region and to the wealth of human resource than anything else. And as public, very publicly visible folks, people that have the ability to speak to it, I think that's an incredibly important role, and I would not minimize that at all.
And it also awakens the sleeping giants we have right here, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Great.
Exactly.
I would let you know that we're going to go into a work session now, and I since moved the bill to Ways and Means, but I'll let you know, since I serve on that committee, you mentioned a report card. That committee is paying very close attention to how the dollars are working that we spend in state government. So I would recommend that you have such a report card to show the committee about how you've been able to leverage those dollars, and you know, have a chart with some of the projects and some of the leveraged money and how much we've actually done for this state with that little bit of investment. Mm-hmm. So I'll just give you that tip now so that you're one step ahead of the game. All right, thank you very much for coming. I have no one else signed up to testify, no other questions. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 838. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 838. Senator Starr, do you have a motion?
Yes. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 838 to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 838 to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senate Bill 838 is on its way. Thank you all for coming today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And we're going to close the work session, and we're going to go next to a bill Senator Morris is here for. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 853. Ms. Taylor, you want to tell us about it while Senator Morris comes forward?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 853, as printed, authorizes the universities and the university system and OHSU to establish venture development funds and directs the State Board of Higher Education at OHSU to establish a grant program for distribution of grants to facilitate commercialization of university research and development. This has a subsequent referral to revenue, and I understand that Senator Morris has an amendment that I think is going to be delivered to us soon.
Today?
Right.
Oh.
That's Purdue.
Now, when you talked to me this morning, I didn't think that I was going to be ready today. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell me the story?
We'll go ahead and get started. For the record, Frank Morris, State Senator from District 8, Albany and Corvallis. Madam Chair, colleagues, I know that the afternoon is getting long, and I very much appreciate the opportunity to bring this bill forward today. When we spoke at noon, Madam Chair, I didn't know whether the amendments would be ready, but in fact they are. And
You underestimated our
legislative
counsel.
Well, I tell you, we've got great legislative counsel. Let me give you just a little bit of background on this bill. During the interim, I had the opportunity to go through the Austin Entrepreneurial Business Program Center, which was the renovation of an old dormitory, a grand old dormitory at Oregon State University. And due to the generosity of Ken and Joanne Austin, this dormitory is being remodeled and now is actually in use, and it's called the Austin Entrepreneurial Business Program. An incredible program, innovative, very innovative. And during the interim, when we were walking through and the plaster was falling and they were doing the demolition and reconstruction, what dawned on me was, how in the world do we create the synergy that is existing within the schools of business, particularly now a focus at Oregon State? And by the way, I think this will be modeled throughout other institutions, what Oregon State is doing. Very innovative. How do you take that kind of energy and innovation in the school of business? How do you marry it to the many thousands of friends and alumni, people that are interested, specifically now we're talking about Oregon State University, and take that entrepreneurial business aspect and then match it to the research and development that's coming out of our schools of science and engineering? And how do we fund that activity? And how do we do it so that you're really creating something significant within these institutions? And so, having had that thought and stewing on it and continuing to work on it through the interim, we've now condensed that into a bill that I think does, in fact, capture those components in Senate Bill 853. I would hope that this bill would accomplish three things. One is it would create a significant fund, a source of funds for this commercialization of concepts that arise out of these great institutions that we have. That it would, in fact, be a significant source of funding, and that it would be sustainable. Rather than relying on each biennium some specific appropriation, that you would have the ability to have a sustainable source of funding, and that in fact that it would be synergistic, so that you're bringing together all of the components that make our universities successful. The friends, the alumni, the foundations, the tech transfer offices, the schools of business, and the schools of science and engineering. And how do you bring those all together in a synergistic way to raise funds and promote economic development that will arise out of these ideas
and concepts that come out of our universities. So that's the intent of this bill. I think it does that. What it does, it provides each university an opportunity to create their own venture development fund. The rules being set through Oregon University system, and in the case of Oregon Health Science University, they go through, because they're independent, they go through that same process themselves. But these funds would be available then to fund the most difficult stage of commercialization, as you've heard, and that's that proof of concept stage, which is called in many circles the Valley of Death, because it's that very first idea. How do you get it to the bench and actually create a model and move it forward? And that's what these funds would do. They would do two things. One is they would provide entrepreneurial education through the schools of business, and they would also provide that seed money for the initial application of research. Now, the funding mechanism would be a similar model to what we find in the Oregon Cultural Trust. And it would be through a tax credit equal to 60% of the amount actually contributed to the fund by the taxpayer. The credit shall be apportioned at a rate of 1/3 per year for the 3 consecutive years. And the credit allowed under that section would not exceed $50,000 or the tax liability of the taxpayer for that tax year. So it would be relying on the friends and alumni of the university that would contribute to these funds. It would be specific to each university, rules having been set through the OUS and OHSU, and to be available for entrepreneurial education and proof of concept funding.
Senator Morse, I have a note here that you gave me in February about this bill, and you said that the OCED board was favorable at that time. So you've run this through the OCED board, and
Madam Chair, thank you for raising that issue. Initially, my concept was, how do we create a funding mechanism that essentially backloads the tax credit? And based on the success of the commercialization efforts. And we have tried this. Pat Scruggs has been a yeoman, yeo woman, I guess. Yeoman sounds better than yeo woman. Anyway.
Well, yesterday, Senator, I said I'd been grandfathered in, and someone reminded me that to be PC, it would be grandfathered in. So we can't win.
But anyway, tremendous effort in engaging people to try to understand, if we go out and ask for venture funds, which indicates a return on the investment, that this stage of funding is so difficult that it is unlikely that the original concept that we had would be successful in attracting funds. And so that's why we've then steered back to the more conventional tax credit type of funding mechanism, as opposed to back loading it. This has been processed through, and Pat can address all of the folks and steps and trying to figure out something. I would like to also make a comment with respect to Senate Bill 838 in the Commercialized Research Fund of $2 million. This is not intended to be competitive to that, but my concern is that taking $2 million out of current revenues in this biennium, it may be a difficult task. And I believe that there's some merit in looking at something that has a sustainable life that would go on into the future, so that we're setting up a funding mechanism that allows these universities to have the ability to go out and raise funds and do it year after year after year, and grow their institutions.
All right, thank you. And next we have probably Mary Foley.
Yes, good afternoon, Chair Walker and members of the committee. My name is Mary Foley. I'm here representing Oregon Health and Science University. I work in the Office of Technology and Research Collaborations, and my role in the office, amongst many others, The last year has been actually leading the implementation of our own University Innovation Fund, which is very similar to the one that Senator Morse has just been discussing. We've actually modelled this fund on a number of other models that we've seen in other universities coming out of British Columbia and Baylor. So it's nothing new. They're tried and trusted models. We use this fund to actually provide proof of concept funding for early stage research. So OHSU receives well over $260 million a year in federal funding, and we need to find a way to take that basic research into a commercial arena. Often NIH will not fund that kind of research. So the Innovation Fund, the Bioscience Innovation Fund, as we call it, operates to actually provide that seed funding, to provide that proof of concept. So we actually run this fund once a year. We propose, we have 10 technologies that we put up. They are presented to a board of outside evaluators. These represent, these people are the committee, are VCs from Oregon, business owners, people who actually understand technology commercialization, and we pitch these companies to them to decide which ones should be funded. We usually fund up to about $100,000 per year with the option of going for a second year of funding. The technologies are picked primarily on their likelihood, hope, that they will actually generate either a licensee interest following funding or be used to start up their own company, which we would hope would stay in Oregon.
Which you hope will stay in Oregon, so you don't have that requirement?
We had, if you call Vancouver, Washington, Greater Portland, we did 7 out of 7 last year.
Okay.
So on startup companies, so otherwise it would be 6. But we've actually found that running this fund has actually been very educational as well for everyone involved, both our inventors and university. The funds have actually been used primarily in many cases to create jobs in the form of postdocs who work in the labs actually doing the research, who suddenly discover that there is a world outside academic research and that it can be applied to be something really useful. This is our second year going into the Innovation Fund, and we hope it will actually turn out to be an evergreen fund. The money that we use comes from the OHSU Foundation, and that relies on our donors, our alumni, business community, to actually provide gifts to the foundation. One of the reasons I am so in favour of this particular bill is because one of the difficulties in raising money for this kind of fund is that you need to incentivize the donors to actually give to the fund. This tax credit would actually give them a huge incentive. I've had experience with the Oregon Cultural Trust in another arena and have actually seen what a dramatic effect that can have on the donor population in their willingness to suddenly give a lot more to something because they actually see that they will get far more bang for their buck because they get the tax credit, so they can give $1,000 but it only really costs them maybe $500. And once you start people giving money, once people start giving money, they keep giving money in the donation arena. Anyway, what you said, Benty, yeah. Welcome questions.
Yes, Senator Morset.
Well, I hate to be bursting bubbles and balloons, but you realize that we have $28 billion that are going out the back door in terms of tax credits. I do participate in the Cultural Trust, which I think has a limit of $500, mm-hmm. but we are also looking at tax credits, the tax expenditures, in terms of how can we continue to afford to lose $28 billion. Our general fund is something like $12 billion, so there's a huge amount of money that's going out. And I know it's a great incentive. Rather than paying it in taxes, you can use it for something else, but I worry about that. And I would like to identify existing tax credits that we could eliminate and then put this in their place. So that's what I keep telling people. If you want funding for a program, go find a tax credit. It takes a supermajority to get rid of one, and it doesn't have impact for a year. But that is to me, a very troubling expenditure. Not in your particular program, but I mean just in general that we are. I think the ship is sinking, and there's a hole in it.
I might let you know that I have Senate Bill 719 that we'll be hearing next week, I think, next Wednesday, that allows the state treasurer to sell bonds, for bonds, and for people to invest in university research, which is a kind of a new idea as well. So you might want to track that one a little bit. I'm still working on that. 719. And that wouldn't be a tax credit, but people would be able to get interest on their bonds. And then also, if the project hits big, they get a dividend of sorts. So we're still working the concept out. All right, Ms. Scruggs, did you have any testimony on this bill, or were you just here to answer questions?
Yeah, some quick testimony.
Okay.
For the record, again, my name is Pat Scruggs. I'm the Innovation Technology Manager for Oregon Economic and Community Development. I also have staffed the Oregon Council for Knowledge and Economic Development for the last, actually, 3 years. And so with some of the questions that you have, my testimony is a reflection of conversations that have gone on literally for the past 2 or 3 years on this subject matter. The Council for Knowledge and Economic Development has identified consistently two real gaps in this whole innovation economy theme that you've heard today. And that one is our entrepreneurial talent that we have, the people who can start businesses, especially these that are utilizing research. And the other is that proof of concept, valley of death stage, the gap in the capital that we have here. And those being two real and remaining gaps in our innovation continuum. And what this bill, I think, is an attempt to do is to help both of those, because the beauty of this, in my opinion, is that it addresses not only just the proof of concept, but it marries that with our entrepreneurial development activities at the business schools, which to me is a perfect marriage of these things. You know, one of the things that Ms. Foley did not talk about in time limitation was their program works with the OGI Entrepreneurial Boot Camp, and so one of the things that happens with their professors and others going through their proof of concept is they get that business school interface and they understand that. Those are the kinds of connections I think are important in this area. And then just the other thing from my written testimony, and I will not go through this, is, again, as she said, these are noted in other states, and the payback for this is just literally multiples, 10 to 15 fold in a lot of other states in terms of return. What ends up happening with this proof of concept is the $100,000 that OHSU may spend in their proof of concept phase may attract in the next round of funding 10 to 15 million of private investment, perhaps from Mr. Chin at OVP Partners, or one of our earlier investments in the Oregon Investment Fund, one of those two. And so we're multiplying this time again by keeping that investment here in Oregon. One of the things that we were concerned about with the Oregon Investment Fund and some of the others is how are we going to make sure that those investments stay here in Oregon? One is they have to have good, viable, business-ready concepts. And this is one of those ways to make a connection to an investment that this body has already done in the last legislative session. So for those reasons, and the fact that we do have a high rate of return, it leverages a lot. These create real jobs today, as well as, I think, provide research opportunities and educational opportunities for the university system in both the research and entrepreneurial. That's why I think there's some real strength in this bill. And I would also agree with the senator that the tax credits here, that we need to wisely use those in the areas where they do offer significant returns. And I do believe, especially from other proven states and their university systems, that we could have that type of return. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Morse, is the Dash 1 amendment all that you need now? Is this bill ready to go with this Dash 1?
Yes.
Okay. So, colleagues, as you see the dash one, it does, as Senator Morse testified, limit the credit to recoupment over a three-year period. And this bill goes to revenue, and Senator Deckard has indicated a willingness to have this bill over in revenue. He has not enough to do over there. So, I don't know, Senator Starr, do you have a motion for me, perhaps?
Yeah, I do.
I've just closed it. Now I'm going to open a work session, and now Senator Starr has a motion for me.
Yes, Madam Chair, I move dash one amendment to Senate Bill 853.
Senator Starr moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 853. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Starr.
Move Senate Bill 853 to the Committee on Revenue.
Senator Starr.
As amended.
Moves Senate Bill 853 as amended to the Committee on Revenue. Any discussion?
Yes. Thank you.
Senator Moore.
I did introduce a bill that would be a tax credit, and I want to fess up. And what it did was allowed employers to pay part of the tuition for people who work for them at a community college. They could pay part of the tuition. That would be up to the employer to do that. And so we asked for a revenue impact, and the estimate for the first year was $45,000, and for the second year was up to around $90,000. Now, have you or will you have any kind of a revenue impact on what it might do to our collectible income? Is this something that...
Well, Senator Moore said that will be something that will be prepared as the bill goes to the Revenue Committee.
Okay. Well, we got this from the staff before we even introduced the bill, because we were told that anything that, you know, that... So I will support the bill to revenue. I'm not sure I will support it when it comes to the floor, but I will certainly move it along.
Well, I'm glad, Senator Moore said that you believe in equal opportunity for those tax credits.
Well, $50,000 a year is a little less than whatever it is.
Right. Okay, any other discussion? Any objection to moving the bill as amended to revenue? Hearing none, so ordered. Off it goes. Thank you for coming and testifying today. Okay, we are going next to, we've got a half an hour to get two bills and two work sessions done. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 674. Senator Devlin, can you come forward while Ms. Taylor explains the bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 674 creates the e-learning task force and allows the Department of Ed to provide assistance with this task force. The task force sunsets on January 2007. And this has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've been given an indication from a member of the committee to be brief.
But not so brief you forget to tell us who you are.
Okay. For the record, Madam Chair, I'm Senator Richard Devlin from District 19. I am here on this bill creating an e-learning task force. You will note on the bill that there are three sponsors of the bill. I think it's indicative that the sponsors are the subcommittee chair for education, myself, the education committee chair for the Senate, Senator Walker, and the education committee chair for the House, Representative Flores. I think all of us are united. All of us are united in our interest in seeing that e-learning advances in this state. One of the things that we came to a discussion of when looking at e-learning issues in the state, we clearly saw that there are many entities out there doing a lot of different things. Unfortunately, in this particular budget environment, some of the most creative things that they are doing are some of the first items being cut in budgets. One of the things that we think is particularly important in this biennium is uniting all of those interests to find more efficient ways to offer some of their programs, to look at better ways to offer those programs, to make sure that those programs can be used from one sector of education to the next. One of the interesting things about e-learning is its potential is literally limitless. It is not a replacement. No one would say that for a teacher in a classroom. But its potential in terms of what it can provide for students is just, it's almost beyond the imagination. If you can imagine an English student actually speaking to a Shakespearean actor at the Shakespearean Festival in real time, that is clearly possible. If you would ask a science student in middle school speaking to a marine biologist at the Marine Biology Center on the Oregon coast, that's clearly possible in real time. There is so much potential here that it should not be overlooked. We're basically trying to get this bill together so it will be sent ultimately to the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Education, and that I will try to fund it with as little resources as possible to do the job. But I think that there are many interests here that are very interested in this proposal, and so maybe not here testifying other than the assistant superintendent of the Department of Ed, but a lot of people have expressed interest to me on this. I will leave it at that.
Senator Devlin, we've done our prioritization already. How are we going to fit this in?
It's actually, part of it is in our prioritization.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And I know Senator Starr has a big interest in this topic because he's expressed that before in this committee. Did you have any comments, Senator Starr?
Well, I think that the important work is being done, and to have a task force to look at what's being done, how we might implement greater opportunities in effective ways is really important. And right along with this, I hope we continue to support chartering electronic classrooms, electronic charter schools for our state as this goes forward.
Okay, well, thank you, Senator Devlin, for your presentation. We only have two people signed up to testify, Camille Cole and Vicki Fleming. If you'll come forward and just briefly tell us what's on your mind.
Madam Chair, to expedite your hearings, do you want me to just sit to the right? Because the
that
next bill
fine.
Is mine also.
That would be fine. That way you're close at hand if we have some questions come up. Ms. Fleming, just introduce yourself and roll with the time here.
Senator Walker, members of the committee, Vicki Fleming, Deputy Superintendent, Oregon Department of Education, and with me is Camille Cole, our specialist on e-learning, virtual learning, however you'd like to describe it. And Camille has been involved in this work since Senate Bill 622 days, and so is our resident expert on the variety of opportunities. I'll be very quick. We're just here in support of Senate Bill 674. We've been working at the department with a variety of players that provide online and virtual learning opportunities, both school districts, community colleges. We have issued and awarded a proposal for a group of folks to come together that represent public school online programs, including Cool School and Salem Kaiser Online, Chemeketa Community College, and Portland State University. They've been working together on the design and implementation of an alliance that gives you a P16 opportunity for students to access course content across those boundaries. And we are very encouraged about that work and look forward to their proposal to us, which is really the design and the costing out of what it would take to build a statewide system that would provide access for students in both the K-12 system and the post-secondary environment. So we'll have that before the session is over, and we can share that with you. The emerging models include everything from charter school environments to ESDs implementing. We have one alternative education program in Clackamas County that is referred to as the Clackamas Web Academy. There are lots of innovative ways that people are using virtual environments to extend the learning opportunities, as Senator Devlin said. Some of the issues that we're dealing with, the primary issue is how do we fund these charter schools and innovative programs in a way that really that we can guarantee that there's program accountability, that we can oversee the content quality and the accessibility to students. Teacher training is another issue, and we are looking at solutions to all of those things. We're in the process of drafting language, both that's in the process for legislation and process for rulemaking with the State Board of Education. The task force gives us the opportunity to coalesce all those different people in one place to get a clear agreement and a consensus around how we manage in a virtual learning environment, and would be very helpful to us in our work at the agency. So I'll stop there. I have some information about what the current environment looks like in terms of how many course offerings are offered in the K-12 and community college and university environment. If you have any interest in that, I can either share that with you now or in writing later.
Probably in writing, Ms. Fleming, so we can move along. Ms. Cole, do you have anything to add?
For the record, my name is Camille Cole. I'm with the Oregon Department of Education. Madam Chair and committee members, I would like to add that we are in support of this bill. It would help to bring together the work that's been done over the last 6 to 10 years, not only by K-12 education, but community college and higher ed, to leverage the funds that were offered to us through Senate Bill 622 to bring resources to students in schools in all areas of the state of Oregon so that they can meet rigorous standards, so that they can go on and learn in community colleges and higher education institutions. And we believe that by legislating this committee, that that will offer the coordination and standardization efforts that are needed at this time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Question. Thank you. There are, at least in two parts, two separate locations in the state, I think, efforts underway to do a charter/homeschool e-learning program, which would have profound, I think, negative impacts on the ADMW, the budget, and so on. Do you have administrative rules in place yet to deal with that?
Senator Walker, Senator Morissette, thank you for that question. That is the primary issue that is a little bit of a stickler for us at this point, and the rules that we have are in draft form. I think we have both some opportunity to address this statutorily and through a rulemaking process. The issue that we have is one around a virtual school that really didn't meet the definition that's currently in statute around a comprehensive instructional program, because the instruction was in fact going to be provided by the parent rather than a licensed teacher, and the ratio of teacher to student was a little bit outside of what we think would qualify as a quality program. So we have concerns about, again, how you provide those, what the teacher-student contact ratio is, who actually is at the instructional end of that transaction. And we are in the process of developing rules, but we'll probably be working with you on that.
Senator Devlin has a response as well.
Yes, Senator Morissette, Madam Chair. That is an issue that is out there, but that is probably entirely separate from the issue that is before you. This includes, there are private providers in terms of entities, nonprofits in particular, in e-learning. There are public providers. This is more actually to get everybody to work together. It's not even, it has literally little or no bearing on the issue of this, of the school formula.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions?
Well, I just wondering, Madam Chair, what the senator thought as to the possibility of the fate of this once it gets assigned to the education subcommittee and what it means.
Well, since without much prompting from the chair of that subcommittee, the subcommittee set aside $50,000 today to look at e-learning.
We did.
Issues in their priorities.
Life is full of coincidences, isn't it?
No, I should say this. The subcommittee set aside in their priorities $50,000. That does not mean that the co-chair set aside that priority, nor does it mean that that will survive the scrutiny of the committee's discussion of other priorities.
Yes. Yep.
Did that money come from the ESD?
No.
No.
Okay, good.
Actually, the subcommittee, Madam Chair, I don't want to take too much time here in your committee. The subcommittee ranked a couple of items in terms of restoring them that the governor had not put in his budget. And one of them was some of the leadership programs in terms of, like, Future Farmers of America, Future Business Leaders of America, DECA, and many others.
Good. Mm-hmm. My favorite program.
Yeah, see, this subcommittee is doing great things, Senator Morissette. And how quickly I forgot we had done that this morning. All right, any other questions? Hearing none, thank you for testifying. I'm closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 674. I'm opening a work session on Senate Bill 674, so I can entertain a motion.
I move Senate Bill 674 to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 674 to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Hearing none. Any objection? Hearing none. So ordered. close the work session. Thank you very much. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 580. Marjorie Taylor will tell us about that.
Okay, Madam Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 580 requires school districts to consider including safety improvements that create safer routes to schools when they're looking at large construction projects. This does not have a subsequent referral to another committee, and we did receive a fiscal statement from, well, we received from legislative fiscal an impact statement that says there's no fiscal impact. There you go.
Okay. Senator Devlin and David Williams have joined us at the table. Senator Devlin, you can take it, and if you can finish in 8 minutes or less, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, the representative from the Oregon School Boards Association isn't sitting far away from me because he opposes this bill. It's because he favors this bill. I do have written testimony that is actually not prepared in a format to turn over to the committee, but rather than bore the committee with the written testimony, I will go.
Good, it does.
I will kind of. I will kind of basically just speak about this bill fairly directly. Many people know that I've been involved in transportation issues for almost a quarter of a century. That's a long time.
I didn't know that. I don't think any of us knew that.
former chair of the Joint Policy Committee on Transportation in the metropolitan area. But I've been involved in safety issues for children in terms of both in schools and in terms of traffic issues for many years. One of my proudest bills that I worked on was the bill that was the first improvement in child safety in cars, I believe, in more than two decades, which was the addition of booster seats.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always been looking at these issues. In that particular case, one of the sponsors on this bill, actually was instrumental in my efforts on the booster seats, and that was Senator Starr's son, Senator Bruce Starr. He's also a supporter of this bill. This bill is not particularly prescriptive. This is not really telling schools that you have to do something in the sense you have to make an expenditure or you have to do something that you might not choose to do. What it basically is giving school districts another tool to look at safe routes to schools. What it basically does is says that if you are going to put out a general obligation bond measure that's more than $1 million, or you're going to spend more than $500,000 on an individual building, that you will examine the issues around safe routes to that school. A mile and a half if it's a secondary school, a mile if it's an elementary school. That's because our standards for transportation and reimbursing school districts requires children that are secondary school a mile and a half and farther, or less than a mile and a half, I'm sorry, to basically walk. We don't have to provide transportation to them, and for primary school, a mile. Many of the situations that students face in some communities in terms of the safety issues, in terms of walking that single mile, are conditions that would never be acceptable either on the school grounds or inside a school building. One of the difficulties in this, and I can very clearly identify that difficulty, Senator Bruce Starr and I worked on another bill two sessions ago, which basically ended up with the great language that school districts in cities and counties should think about cooperatively working together to look at school safety issues. It's actually in ORS. That's basically what it says. All that this basically says is look at these issues, and if you choose to, you can include some funding in that bond measure to address some of these issues. For those of you that are familiar, and most of you are probably familiar with transportation projects, many times even the smallest of transportation projects has 2, 3, 4, 5 different partners. The ability for a school district to come forward and even say it has $50,000 to contribute to an intersection improvement, even if the intersection improvement costs $500,000, often moves up that intersection being improved because there are some local funds. We utilize a little bit of state funds right now in about $3.5 million statewide in terms of the 1% set aside for pedestrian bikes and other that. A lot of that $3.5 million statewide ends up going for safety improvements. There is some potential that in the new Surface Transportation Act that is now, at least the version in the House, that there will be significantly more dollars for safe routes to schools. One of the things that this may enable to do, that those dollars will probably obviously come with match requirements, is giving school districts some options. I'm not actually in this bill telling school districts that they have to build anything or that they have to participate in anything. I'm just asking them to look at the issue and that if they, and to give them a tool, that if they want to do something, they have a tool to be able to address a portion of it. That's the entire intent of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Devin. Senator Cruz?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of questions. I guess a little surprised. I know what the state law requires or doesn't require as far as transportation, but I can't think of a single elementary school in my town where we have elementary kids walking a mile to school. The transportation system's there. The buses pick them up. So, and I also know that in any time that they have built a school or added on to a school, clearly the transportation nexus is a huge part of what they look at. So I guess I'm trying to wonder, I mean, that's already part of consideration, at least from my perspective in the schools I've been associated with in their construction projects. I'm trying to figure out what problem this is trying to fix.
Senator Cruz, Madam Chair, I think the problem that it's trying to fix is, well, I think they look at transportation issues. Many times schools are faced with safety problems where no one is planning to address that particular issue at this time. The issue about children walking to school is the issue of reimbursement. We are not required to reimburse school districts for transportation within 1 mile for a primary school child or within 1.5 mile for a secondary school child. That is the issue. The underlying issue is there is that school districts should have some capabilities to address some of those safety issues in that 1 mile or mile and a half. This gives them a potential tool to be able to do that. It doesn't require them to do that. I think actually if you were to compare some areas, Senator Starr's area, Senator Deckert's area, my area, I've slowed down a bit, but my area has many times built one or two new elementary schools every year or two. And I know in Senator Deckert's area it's probably half a dozen. And in Senator Starr's area, probably similar. And this isn't really prescriptive in a sense in that they have to do this. This merely gives them a tool to address some of these issues. If I have a moment, Madam Chair, I'll give you an example. My son, who is now a senior at Linfield, went to Tualatin Elementary School. At the time he went to Tualatin Elementary School, part of that time I was a city councilor. We have an urban renewal district in the industrial area of Tualatin that had beautiful wide sidewalks separated from the roadway, wide bikeways. In fact, many people go out into that industrial area now and bike. For many years, up until a few years ago, in the city actually getting a little bit of extra money, students in that community who were at the elementary school, either the one at Tualatin or at Byram, walked on Boone's Ferry. On Boone's Ferry, they walked on a sidewalk, then they walked through a gully, then they walked back out onto the road with 40-mile-per-hour transportation, then they walked back to a sidewalk, and that's the kind of conditions that I think schools should have some tools to address and to work with their communities on, and that's basically what this tries to do. But they didn't actually do some of those improvements that resolve that till I believe about 4 or 5 years ago. And my son is now a senior at Linfield, and he was, you know, obviously in the first through sixth grade there.
Very briefly, we built two new middle schools and three elementary schools in Springfield, and we did exactly that. But we did get money from the county and from the city, and the school district passed the bonds. But that was our priority, is that kids would have a safe place, because there were ditches, there were no sidewalks, there were sidewalks, ditches, and so on, and now we've fixed it. But the school district didn't put it in their bonding capacity, which they could under, that you, I think your bill is a suggestion that they think about it.
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, I think one of the things that when you think about it is I've had school districts, I just had one, one of my school districts that has built an entirely new high school, remodeled extensively another high school. Those improvements in total are probably close to a, in the tens of millions of dollars. I think one of them is 50 or 60 million and the improvements are 20 or 30. All of this might allow them to do is maybe there's an intersection somewhere they'd like to contribute 200,000 or 150,000 and they could include that in that bond measure.
We have testimony here, colleagues, from Lori Wimowalen of Oregon Education Association, written testimony that indicates this bill will help to target resources to this often overlooked but important aspect of protecting student health and wellness. This bill is not remedy prescriptive. It does envision a localized solution for each circumstance. So, Mr. Williams, can you take us home on this bill so we can do our work session?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, David Williams, Oregon School Boards Association. I'm here to testify of two reasons. One, this is a good bill and it should pass. Merely codifies in state a policy of the legislature that we think is good policy that, as Senator Cruz pointed out, is happening in a lot of communities around the state. The other reason is to put to bed the notion that OSBA only testifies in opposition.
Great. Thank you.
And I should add that Chuck Bennett could not be here, but he asked me to say COSA supports him as well.
Chuck comes in support something.
We don't want naysayer to
good bad cop.
Forming our image.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, I don't know if you have it for the record, but the Oregon Department of Transportation was going to deliver a letter.
I was just going to mention that. Thank you. You do have a letter here at your desk from the Department of Transportation in support of the bill. Okay, no further questions. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 580. Open a work session on Senate Bill 580.
Madam Chair, move Senate Bill 580 to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Senator Storm moves Senate Bill 580 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Yes, I'd like to say one thing. This is just like your bullying bill. I remember when you introduced that. It was safe walking to school. Very good. You're on target.
Any other discussion? Senator Cruz, are you still
It sounds nice. I think it's already being done. I'm not, you know, my assumption, and if I'm wrong on the ability to add something for safety to a bond measure, I would assume it already exists that they can do that. If that's not true.
Our understanding in talking to legislative counsel is it does not. But there may be some ambiguity in the law, too, in whether, but my general understanding is that it does not allow for off-site improvements.
Well, can I ask the sponsor one more question?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How far off-site? I mean, for example, you build a new school, and it's going to require a traffic light, and it's right at the nexus. I mean, I would assume that the school district contributing part of that cost could be part of their bond measure, couldn't it?
Senator Cruz, Madam Chair, I don't believe it could be part of their bond measure, but however, the assessments from the city for systems development charges obviously could be part of their bond measure because that is a requirement for building the school. The assessments that a city might make in terms of like a half-street improvement probably could become part of their bond measure because that's a requirement for building the school. But my understanding is that this would add some clarification to the law so that when they look at off-site improvements like this, that they could be included in a bond measure. That's my understanding of talking to legislative council.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm not going to stand in front of a rolling train, so I just want some clarification.
Okay. Any other discussion? Hearing none, I think we're going to call the roll on this one. Dawn, you haven't done that all session, I don't think. Okay, way to go.
Senator Decker?
I'll vote yes. It's not a very enthusiastic yes, but it's helpful to hear that they cannot already do the geo bond, or the bond, they can include this, but my assumption is that the school districts already do this, I hope.
You know,
a yes or a no would
no.
be good.
I'm going to say no, and I'll explain on the floor.
All right, thank you.
Aye.
Vice Chair Stern?
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 580, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed from this committee. Sounds like a floor. I need a carrier on this bill. Senator Devlin, do you want to carry it?
No. I can.
You don't have to, but it's your bill, and there's going to be questions.
I like Senator Cruz to carry.
It might not be an enthusiastic.
You're carrying the bill.
You're carrying the bill.
And
you can't leave
Madam Chair, Senator Devlin, if you could get certainty on the bonding issue before,
yes,
that would be helpful to me.
All right. Senator Devlin, you're the carrier. Closing the work session. Colleagues, we have two quick hearings on work sessions. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 749. Ms. Taylor, could you please update us on those amendments?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 749 was last heard on the 28th of February. Since that time, we've received the Dash 3 amendment from Senator Walker, which replaces the first four sections of the printed bill. It defines terms, requires school boards to adopt policies on the prevention, identification, evaluation, and assessment of child abuse, requires employees to report abuse caused by another employee to a supervisor, requires the person who receives that report to actually follow the board-approved procedures, and requires training for school employees, that training be made available to parents and guardians, and that training also be made available to children on the prevention of child abuse, and requires law enforcement agencies to notify the person who reported that abuse as to when the investigation is concluded and what the outcome of the investigation is.
Okay, that's a lot of changes. I want my colleagues to know that I took all the testimony, as you know, I take very good notes. And so after the hearing we had on February 28th, I went down to Legislative Council, worked with Cindy Hunt. I also have been working with the Oregon School Boards Association, with Oregon Education Association, and with the help of Jeff Green through Jim Green, on getting some of the legal information taken care of, because as you know, in the testimony in the previous hearing, there was concern about requiring school districts to open up an investigation, and that really took on more of a legal role and a law enforcement role. So now we are just requiring school districts to have a procedure set up so that everyone knows what is going on, who gets the reporting, because one of the things we also heard in the testimony, colleagues, was that there wasn't always a follow-back from the Department of Human Services. People were left hanging as to how these reports were being processed and what was being done with this report about a teacher or an administrator or any other school employee, or it even could be a report. Okay.
I vote aye.
All right.
And Madam Chair, let me remind you that this is also going to Ways and Means.
Okay, great. I just wanted you all...
Yeah, we haven't adopted the amendment.
I just wanted you all to be clear what was going on. So, Senator Starr, would you like to help me out here?
Well, I think we've got a Dash 3 amendment.
We do.
And I will move Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 749, Madam Chair.
Senator Starr moves the Dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 749. Any further discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Starr.
Move Senate Bill 749 as amended to Committee on Ways and Means.
With any kind of recommendation?
With a deep pass.
As amended?
As amended.
Thank you.
Twice amended.
Twice amended. Okay. Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 749 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion? The only discussion is, colleagues, thank you, thank you, thank you. I think this bill is so necessary, and I really want to thank all the parties for working with me on this, and I hope the Ways and Means Committee gives its consideration to this bill, there will be some small impact. I'm hoping it's small. So we just need to find out what that fiscal is and work it in with the budget. Any objection to the bill? Hearing none. So ordered that it's being sent to Ways and Means. No carrier on that. Thank you. I'm going to close the work session on 749. Open work session on Senate Bill 755. Marjorie, please update us on that one.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, Senate Bill 755 was last heard on the 28th of February. Since that time, again, Senator Walker has proposed the -3 amendment, which replaces Section 1 of the printed bill. It defines disciplinary records, school districts, and this does not have a subsequent referral to another committee at this time.
And briefly, colleagues, again, I took the comments to heart, and I've also talked with Senator Cruz, who had some questions about felonies. We have decided on the -3. Those work great, and I think this is another check and balance on protecting our children from child abuse and sex abuse, so I would appreciate your vote today. Senator Starr, do you have a motion?
-3 amendment again.
Senator Starr moves the -3 amendment to Senate Bill 755. Any discussion? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Starr?
Move Senate Bill 755 as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 755 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
I'll vote for it only if you carry it.
Well, I was planning on that. Thank you, Senator. Hearing none, no objection. Senate Bill 755 moves to the floor of the Senate. I close the work session. Thank you very much.
Before you close the meeting?
Yes.
Could we, next time we meet, open the drapes?
Well, that's a good idea.
Yeah, now that there's no sun out there, I would be happy to do that. All right. Thank you. I will carry that bill. I do not live in a cave either, so thank you. We're adjourned. See you next week. Have a great weekend. Thank you.